back to another episode of Jonah and Ben Play Board Games with Friends. I am Jonah, joined for the 5th, 10th, 30th, 50th, many weeks in a row by my co-host Ben. Hello, Ben.
Hello. I think it's like 75.
That's a big number, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, there have been like one or two when I haven't been around, but and like one or two where you haven't been around. But for the most part, I think it's like 75 at this point.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
The Game Brain podcast does a really neat structure for their episode numbering that I quite like. They have it set by rounds and turns. So they're on like round 14, turn 8. But I still don't really know what the difference is between the rounds. So I should maybe be a better listener.
I think if I had to guess, the rounds are probably the seasons. And the turns are probably the individual episodes per season. But if it's continuous and there's no real break, then maybe they're just being having fun.
Not allowed. Speaking of not being allowed to have fun, Ben, what have you been up to lately?
Honestly, not. I mean, I played games in the last week, so that's been fun. But aside from that, I've just kind of been hanging out. My mom came up this weekend. Not for anything good. Her friend's dad passed away, but it was nice to see her. So I haven't seen her in a while. So she came up and yeah, we just kind of hung out.
That sounds nice. The hanging out part, of course.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I watched every football game this weekend, which was fantastic.
There were a lot, right? I heard that they were like pretty nuts too. I don't watch football, so.
It depends on your definition of a lot. There were four games, and, you know, during the season, there are, I think, 14 or 13, anyway. So, but yes, there were four fantastic games in the divisional playoffs, and every single game, although the last one doesn't really count for this stat, ended with a score on the final play to win the game.
That's pretty cool.
So the first three games ended on a 4 second left field goal as time expires. Because it takes a few seconds for the ball to get there, I guess.
Yeah.
And the last game went into overtime and a touchdown ended the game.
So the only one that I knew about in terms of like results and whatnot was the Tampa game.
Yes.
Just because my parents live in Tampa and everybody in this area hates Tom Brady. So,
yeah. This area being New Jersey.
New Jersey, yeah.
And 10 feet around me at all times.
Yeah. So I saw that. I knew they lost. Which was that like was that an upset, I guess?
I don't know. There was an article on 538 last week. You know 538, right?
Yes.
There was an article on 538 last week about how the Rams are a horrible matchup for the Bucks. Like the Rams are just, I guess, built to beat them more so than any of the other teams. And yeah, I mean, the Rams were killing the Bucks. They were up 27-3. Tom Brady famously came back from 28-3 to win a Super Bowl, which we don't need to talk about more than we just did.
Didn't the Giants come back to win a Super Bowl?
Oh, yeah. Tom Brady's continued ascent just drags Eli Manning higher and higher. It's wonderful. Anyway, good football weekend.
Cool.
And good week of gaming. I have a lot of games to talk to you about.
Good. I wouldn't say I have a lot of different games, but I have a lot of gaming to talk to you about.
Well, let's get to it. I also have some surprise questions for you this episode.
Oh, okay. Cool.
You're going to have to respond in real time.
Are you just going to pepper those in, or is it like you know when you're asking them?
Oh, you know what? Since you asked me that, I'm going to start you off with one now. What game made you think, am I an idiot?
Oh, I thought you were asking me if you were an idiot. What game made me think, like, recently or just in general?
All-time career worst.
What game made me think, am I an idiot? To be honest with you, I'd probably teach you.
Yeah?
I mean, I don't know about the worst, but like most trick takers probably would jump to mind, and that one for sure, I feel like an idiot when I play it. So I just don't know what move to make when, and I don't see a benefit in the majority of the moves that I would like to make. So I would say teach you.
All right. I like the answer. You can get back to our regularly scheduled programming and tell me about a game you played this last week.
Sure. Let me pull up the list, which my phone locked at an inopportune time. Mm. Well, since we played Trick Taking in Black and White, I played three more games of Juicy Fruits since then. So I borrowed it from Patrick. I am trying to choose which game I would like to do my replacement of.
CHEWS. Nicely done.
Oh, I see what you did. Good one. No, I want to put it on my 10x10, even though it's not my game, because I'm sure that I'll get five more plays of it. I mean, I'd already be halfway through at this point. But I'm trying to figure out what game I want to take off of my 10x10. Mm. I'm not really sure which game on here. Honestly, I think if I had to guess, I would say probably the best one to take off would be Campy Creatures, just because I don't think that it's a game. I mean, most of my other games are two players or good at two. And I don't think that Campy Creatures is really good at two.
Mm. See,
or at least not as good at two as the others.
My take on 10x10s is to have the goal to play 10 games 10 times, but not to have the goal play these 10 games 10 times.
And that's fair. I just like having a space to track it all.
Yeah.
Though I guess I could just go into my insights on the BG Stats app and look at this year, and I'll know which games I've played how many times. So I don't need to do it. But
when I did a successful 10x10, I changed out quite a few of the games, but I did that throughout the year.
Yeah, which I'm probably going to end up doing, but considering I already have five plays of Juicy Fruits and it's not even the end of January yet, I feel like that's one of the ones that I can probably get into 10.
Ooh, that would be an interesting thing. Play 10 games 10 times, and each game can only be played in a single month.
Oh, God.
Guess that only works for the smaller games.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But, yeah, I played a lot of Juicy Fruits. Since my mom was up here, she doesn't normally like to play games, as I mentioned before. But she joined in and played some Juicy Fruits.
Mm-hmm.
And she enjoyed it. So, yeah, it was a good time. Juicy Fruits is fun. I will say, and this is just my opinion, even though I really like the game, and I think that most people that I play with would like the game, I don't know if once I get to 10 plays, if there's a ton beyond the 10 plays that would make, like, I don't think I would buy the game.
Right.
Ashley said she might buy the game depending, but again, she doesn't play with many people besides me, unless like her mom wants to play a game. I just think once you get those 10 plays in, I'm not trying to get there just for the 10x10, because I do like the game. But I don't know if there's a ton beyond that where, like, it might be one of those games that's fun for a good amount and then you trade it along for the next one that is kind of similar. So
yeah, and, you know, there are so many games that you can just play three or four times and you don't even play it more than that. You feel like you got your money's worth and you sell it. So yeah. Getting 10 plays out of that and then selling it is great.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of selling, really quick, I have also listed quite a few games in the last week. I know one of my goals is to sell 10 games again. And I mean, I'm not sure if I'm going to get there or not, but I am listing Imperial Spells in Steam.
See, that shocked me. Why are you selling it?
I don't know when I would get this one played often enough to make it worth the amount of space it takes up, to be honest. And I know that it's in the storage unit. It's not directly on my shelf, so it's not really truly taking up space, but at the same time, I also built a 3D printer and need some money back. So some things have to go on the block. And I don't know. I just think it's one of those ones that would sell to the person, to someone who wants it. And even though I enjoy it, I don't know if I would get it played enough to justify having it on the shelf.
If you love something, set it free.
Besides that, I'm listing a game called Titans. I think it's called like Titans, a game of historical warfare or something. It's like a alternate history fantasy miniatures dudes on a map game. It looks fun. I haven't played it. But The Epic All-In pledge is worth a good bit. So if somebody wants to buy it, they can buy it for me. I mean, it's not a game that I'm like dying to go play, though I would like to try it because I own it. So we'll see what happens there. And then of course the big one is a Crokinole board with a carrying case.
Wow. That's a deal.
And I mean, it's a really nice carrying case. So I do actually think that it is a pretty decent deal. And the reason I'm selling that is because when my brother and I owned the place in Florida, I bought a second Crokinole board to have down there because Crokinole is not the easiest thing to travel with. So I'm trying to sell the second one.
Might be one of the hardest things to travel with.
Yeah, just a bit. So I'm trying to sell the second one. So we'll see if somebody wants that. I'm going to try and keep that local. But if nobody wants it, I'm not like, it's not one that I'm going to cry over not selling, because At some point in the future, I'll get it to somebody and they'll like it. So yeah, I've listed those in the past week, and I plan to, for whatever game is next on the Greg, Patrick, Ben game day list, since we have a running list, I'm going to try and put Fujikoro in there because I want to try that again before deciding whether or not that one's worth holding on to, because I did like it at PAX, but it's also quite large and involved. So yeah, we'll see. That was a lot of talking.
All right.
For not much ground being gained in the conversation.
It was good. I liked it. I'll say a game that I played to give you a break, and then you can get back to a game that you played. So I played Icky again. I always want to say Icky, but I know that's wrong.
Icky Vicky.
Yeah. So I played Icky again, IKI. It is the Japanese styled game. It was more Japanese looking, I think, in the first edition, because it had the woodblock art on it, but now it just has the really pretty modern art on it. Anyway, played this four players. It was definitely more interesting this time than last time, which is how all games go when you know what you're doing the second time when you didn't really the first. But I felt like I didn't have enough agency in the game, and for that reason, it remains a pass for me. So there is a fire track that you go up for two reasons. One is a few times in the game there's a fire which will burn down the stalls, which is where your cards are. And two, the person who has the highest fire resistance, I guess is what it's called, chooses when they want to go first. And there are five spots that you can go in. There's a one, a two, a three, and a four. And before the one is a 1-4 spot that is a little weaker because you don't get the second action of buying a card when you take that spot. So anyway, it just feels kind of tough because if you fall behind on the flame track, then you can lose the ability to choose when to go. And then someone can choose to go sooner than you and take a card that bumps you up on the flame track before you have that opportunity to buy that card. Does that make sense?
A little bit. It sounds like there's a lot of movement of turn order in this game.
Yeah, so at the center of the game is just a market, and it's a rondelle. So you're just moving around in a circle the whole time and stopping at shops and taking actions. But it doesn't feel great to be forced into a spot when you had other plans, but I guess that's, you know, that's how games work. So
yeah, that's fair.
That is icky.
Cool. So would you say it's icky?
I think I would, but only for me.
Fair. Let's see. The next one I will talk about. I got another game in of Azul.
Ooh. Well, that's perfect because the game that I'm going to talk about next shares three of the four letters with that game.
Oh, I know which one it is. I had to think about that. I'm like, that's a,
yeah.
What is this, some sort of Wordle, a podcast Wordle thing? Today's word, number 26, what was it 216, I think? 260 something. I don't know.
I don't know what the numbers mean.
I think it's just the day that it is.
Oh.
But in any case, yeah, played Azul with Ashley.
And how was it? Did you play on the fun side or the no fun side?
So I think both sides are fun, but I don't think that we're quite ready to step up to the Sudoku side of it yet. So we haven't. But we both really like it. That's also on my 10x10. Not that I'm forcing 10x10s if, you know, I'm not doing the hardcore mode where you can't change games. So I can definitely change games if I'd like to. Mm-hmm. But that one I'm at three plays of this year. And I still like it. I have no reason to want another Azul game. I know that
I think
like
it's the best of the three.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a good game. And the pieces look so appetizing.
Yeah.
So
were you, I think, I forget if you were in the game of Summer Pavilion that I played at Val's. I think you were playing Escape Plan.
Yes. I was next to your game, but right. I was playing Escape Plan.
So I played one of the other Azuls. So we have Standard Azul, which Ben is talking about. We have Azul Stained Glass of Sintra, which is the second one that has some different stuff in it. And then there's Azul Summer Pavilion, which is another Azul with other stuff in it. That's really all you need to know about it because the first Azul is the best. And I played Summer Pavilion, the one with the diamond-shaped tiles. And I had no idea what I was doing. And I won by like 60 points. And that's not because I'm good. So
I think the only thing that I know about that specific Azul is that's the one where you have like that tower and you like dump the tiles into it, right? When they're like garbage, right? They're not even like, they don't come out of that in any meaningful way. It's just when you're cleaning up.
People must have complained about putting square tiles into a square box lid.
Yeah, most likely. But yeah, we played Azul. Azul is fun.
Two player.
Yeah. So we were waiting for, good question. I won, but it was,
what were the scores?
I won 72 to 67.
Oh, wow.
But it was actually crazy because the last round, the very last round, the only reason I won was because in the very last round, I managed to pick tiles strategically enough that Ashley lost 15 points. She had a full minus tile board.
Oh my gosh.
Thing at the bottom. Yeah. So she was whooping me and then lost 15 points. And that's the only reason I won. So yeah, that's Azul. Now tell us about the three letters that go into it.
That's right. And believe it or not, A is not one of them. So I played a game called Luz or Luz. I'm sure it's Luz, but with a better Spanish, Portuguese accent? I don't know. I should have looked it up. Anyway, if I told you that there was a game that was a marriage of Hanabi and trick-taking, would you be interested or not interested, Ben?
To be honest with you, I probably would be even less interested than normal.
Yeah. But for someone like me, very interesting. And for someone like Jessica, probably also very interesting.
Now, I will say the concept sounds interesting, but to me, it doesn't sound fun.
Mm.
That's why I joked in the Discord when you said, I was like, sounds like a lose-lose or luz-luz.
It was win-win because you weren't in it.
Wow, that's rude.
So this game is a trick-taking game that has five suits numbered 1 through 10 or 1 through 8 in a three-player game. And You are going to be dealt a hand. You arrange each suit from lowest to highest, putting a little card on one side of the hand to show which side is the highest side. And then you put that hand face down on the table and pass it to your left. Then the person to your left picks up that hand and does not look at those cards. And then you play a trick-taking game where you do not know what cards are in your hand. And you bid on how many tricks you are going to take, only knowing the order in which the cards are in your hand. So if I have three cards in my hand, and the high card is on the right side of my hand, I know that the rightmost card is the highest, the middle is in the middle, the left is the lowest, of course. And you also get to see the other hands at the table, because that's the only information you really have. There are a few cards taken out of the game, and there is an interesting bidding mechanic, because at the start you choose how many tricks you think you're going to take, and then there is a, what's the word? There's like a buffer token that you can take. So if I pick three of the normal tokens, I'm just saying I will win three tricks. But there's another small token that says and one, so I can take that one. And if I do take that one, then I'm okay to win three or four tricks. So then you play out the round. You have to follow suit. And if I took just the three tokens and I win three tricks, I will get 40 points. If I took the three tokens and I win four tricks, I will get negative 10 points. If I got five tricks, negative 20. So you get negative 10 points for each trick higher than your bid. And then you can take the and one buffer. So if I took the three tokens and the and one buffer, then just think of the 40 points being split. So if I get to three tricks, I get 20 points. And if I get four tricks, I get 20 points. So it just makes it a little easier for you to still go positive.
So interestingly enough, this game does not sound appealing to me at all. However,
interesting. That's
no. The interesting part is the however, I also feel like I kind of want to try it just for the novelty of trying to play a trick taking game where I don't know what I have.
Yeah. So I'm glad you say that, because I played this with Ron and Bill, and it was a fantastic time. We were cracking up. It was so much fun. There was good laughter. There was drama. There was suspense, and it was just a great time. One of the suits is the Saguaro suit, and Bill had four cards in this suit, and he said that he was going to win three tricks. What Bill did not know is that the four cards that he had in that suit were the four highest cards. So in a three-player game, you take out the 9 and the 10. So he had 5, 6, 7, 8 in Saguaro. And Ron and I were both very aware that he had this, because we could see his hand and he couldn't. So I led a Saguaro card, because you have to follow suit, or maybe Ron did, either way. And then Bill knew that he didn't want to win a bunch of tricks, so he made the right choice and played the lowest of his Saguaro cards, because, you know, he has four of them. Surely they're not the highest four in the suit. So he plays that one, and then he sees what it is, and he looks down at how many tricks he said he was going to take, and he fully understood what his Saguaro cards were. It was a great time, a great moment of the game.
Sounds neat.
Yeah.
So again, I would like to try it for the novelty. I probably won't enjoy it, but if there's any way to play this online, I would give it a shot.
Yeah, I'll have to look into it. It was just really fun, and I think it's a cool little interesting take on trick taking. And yeah, another card that has the Hanabi mechanism that I love so much.
Now, remind me, because I cannot keep track anymore, because you're on a trick-taking buying spree. Was this one yours? I might have missed it at the beginning. Or
this was mine, and it was a birthday present from Rob and Jason.
Oh, is that one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Nice. Sounds like it was a good time.
Yeah, so that was Luz or Lose, and it was a good time.
Was it a win?
It was a win-win.
All right. The next one, another quick one. Ashley and I played Silver and Gold.
Oh.
Also, while we were waiting for food to come back, so we were trying to play quick games. Silver and Gold is great. I still love Silver and Gold. Ashley had only played one time before, and she said this time that she liked it better this time than last time. She doesn't remember why she was not super into it last time, but she did like it a lot this time, and that was a lot of fun. I got killed. Actually, it wasn't as bad as I thought, but I lost 103-95. But Ashley got a lot of points. It was a lot of fun. I mean, again, just a small, quick, easy game, and it's a good one.
Yeah, I still like Silver and Gold. Yeah, the flip and right game. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Silver and Gold and Azul, because I think that those are two games that I probably will never sell. And at the same time, they are two games that I would never reach for on my shelf.
Mm-hmm.
I think that those are just my games to show new people that board games can be fun.
Yeah, I get that. I 100% see that sentiment. And I would probably say the same. Like,
I would never bring it either to a game night, I think. Is kind of where I'm going with that.
I feel like maybe I would bring one or the other just as like a filler game if I knew that we needed something light in between.
Right.
But like Silver and Gold was not my choice. Ashley was looking at the shelf and then picked it. And I'm never going to say no to it.
Right. Same.
But yeah, I mean, obviously there are games that I prefer to play over it, but again, it's one of those ones I'll never say no to playing Silver and Gold. So it was fun. We enjoyed it. It was crazy to watch her shoot up the coin track, because I got like no cards with coins and she just kept getting coins, and she got like 40 points from coins or something.
Yeah, the coins are crazy because each coin is a point and then the trophy is a point as well. So yeah, you can have 4, 8, 12, 18, 23, 27 points. Are there four lines or three lines?
No, there are three lines. So she did not get 40 points from coins. She got like the top three and then the full,
that's crazy,
nearly full thing. So it was a lot of points from coins alone. And yeah, that worked out well. She also got, I think, 15 to 20 points from palm trees, which is tough, because that means there were a lot out there on the board when she was crossing them off. So yeah, it worked out well. She had a good game. So that was cool.
Wonderful. The next game for me is The King is Dead. The King is Dead is a 3-player only game as far as I'm concerned, where the best move is not to play, and it's a game, you know, how should I say this? There is a game that got a good bit of buzz like a year or two ago called So You've Been Eaten, because it is a 0-2 player game, and Board Game Geek doesn't allow you to say a game is a 0-player game, but they contended that it was a 0-player game at some part. Anyway, the reason I bring it up is because I feel like The King is Dead can also be a 0-player game. Because if all three people pass for every action, the game plays itself, which is kind of bizarre. So the game is an area control game with a map and some cubes, and there are 8 rounds, and each round you check for the majority of one color in the region associated with the card for that round. So round 1, we're looking at, gosh, who knows, they're British county names from centuries ago. Round 1, we look at that one. Round 2, we look at this one, etc. And if everyone passes, then just at the end of the round, you resolve that. And it just keeps happening. So we have talked about this before. I think The King is Dead is officially not a game I want to play again. It just is very Prisoner's Dilemma and one person says, so if you have people A, B, and C, person A says, all right, person C is going to win. I'm going to pass. Person B, you have to do something about it, or person C wins. And it just kind of is that same thing over and over again, in my opinion. And it's also, you know, something that we noticed in our game. It seems like everyone just tries to get the same number of cubes in each color the whole time, because then it's really a game of chicken. Because if anyone does anything different, it looks like they might lose. I don't know.
Yeah, I know we talked about this one a decent bit when we were doing our Pass the Buck episode, I think is what we were calling it. I don't know if I enjoyed this game all that much either. I know with Patrick in the previous episode, I talked about liking games that had that mechanic where you had to manage your levels of support and or spread out your victory point.
Right.
Gathering.
The Reiner Knizia classic.
Yeah. But for this one, I so dislike the pass the buck gameplay style. I just don't see myself playing games that have this anymore. Like, I don't like it. It's not playing the game is not fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, that was The King is Dead. The King is Dead. Cool. Confirmed. Before you go to your next game, I have another question for you.
Oh, go for it. Spring it on me.
These are all questions that I forced Jessica to think of, so don't think I'm too original here.
Thanks, Jessica.
What game made you question your love of board games?
Jeez, these are hard.
Yeah.
What game made me question my love of board games? In an odd swing of things, I'm going to say that my love of board games probably came into question the moment that I spent over $1,000 on a board game.
I thought you were going to say the moment you spent more than 5 seconds in a game of Tichu.
No. So I bought Mythic Battles Pantheon, all of it, aftermarket on eBay. And it came to like $1,100 or $1,200. Mm-hmm. And then 2 weeks later, they announced a reprint Kickstarter.
Mm.
And the all-in was like $500. Which, I mean, it's still a lot, and it's still ridiculous to think about it. But I'm going away from, like, this game bad, this game make me rethink playing board games, to did I really just do this type territory? Mm-hmm. And then I played Mythic Battles Pantheon, and it's, like, in my top five games. So it all worked out. It's, like, it was fine. But at the same time, like, it's just... it's kind of nice, or not nice, it's kind of wild to think that you could spend that much on a board game. Because I was not that far into my, you know, board game career, I guess you could call it, at that point. So just like thinking that that was possible, it was kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my answer is also kind of a bit of a twist on the answer, or on the question. My answer is Tabletop Simulator. And that is because at the start of the pandemic, when we were playing on it a bunch, I was having a great time. And then I started to get a little burnt out. And I wasn't sure if I was burnt out on gaming or just burnt out on that implementation of gaming. And I think a lot of some board games lost their charm for me playing them online, or like learning them online, because there are so many games that are just better in person. I mean, that's what the hobby is supposed to be. And Jennifer on the Game Brain podcast said, and this is a good quote, I think, any game she tries for the first time on Tabletop Simulator automatically loses 3 points of the rating. Because it just is so much different moving stuff around on your computer, not sitting at the table with friends, not really being able to see the board and your own components. And I think I might agree, a lot of the games on Tabletop Simulator just don't feel as good. Some of them are better than the real world implementations. But I think at a certain point at the start of the pandemic, I was like, should I be doing all these things on Tabletop Simulator?
Yeah, that's an interesting choice. And I can see that. I'm not sure I have come. I mean, I don't know if any games have like lost their luster on Tabletop Simulator. I definitely get the burnt out feeling, though. We were playing a lot of games online, like all the time. And that's fine. But I mean, at a time, at least for me, at a time when I was like more, I wanted to play with people because like we weren't hanging out with people.
Right.
It was like, well, this is just showing me what I'm not getting to do. But at the same time, like, I haven't had Kingdom Death Monster for 3 years now, and I was able to play a campaign of Kingdom Death Monster that arguably, as painful as this is going to sound, arguably is better than playing it in person because it all gets set up for you in like one click, and it's not all over your table and has to get like broken down and set up and put away and all that stuff.
That's the appeal of a board game table, I think.
Yeah.
To put the lid on it. Come back to it later.
Yeah, literally put a lid on it. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. I get the burnout for sure. But I don't know if there's any one specific game that I played on Tabletop Simulator that I was like, eh, this is not for me. I think they've all, I mean, there have obviously been a couple that don't have great mods, but when a mod is pretty good, it's usually pretty good. So.
All right. Next game, cool. Ben.
The next one is a little bit of a throwback. Ashley has wanted to play for a little while, so we played three player. Jared, Ashley, and myself played The Grim Forest, which has actually been on my trade list for quite a bit, but nobody's biting, but that's fine. The Grim Forest, because I think it's been long enough that it's worth a refresher, is based on the Grimm fairy tales and essentially is centered around the three little pigs, the big bad wolf story, that whole story. So you are pigs going to the market, or you're going to the, what are they called? You're going to the brickyard, the forest, or the straw fields, I think is what they call it. And you're collecting straw, wood, or brick to build a straw house, a brick house, or a wood house. And it's essentially a race to build three houses faster than everybody else. But the tiebreakers are the structural soundness of your homes. So if two players were to complete three homes on the same build phase, and someone had two brick houses and the other person and a wood house, and the other person had two wood houses and a brick house, the two brick houses and the wood house would win because they're more structurally sound, aka more expensive to build. It's got some neat bits to it. It's got simultaneous action selection worker placement, similar to Tricarion. So you choose where you want to send your pig. You all put it down as a hidden card, and then you reveal it. So you don't know until you reveal your gather cards whether or not you are splitting resources with somebody. And then there are fable cards and friend cards. Friend cards are typically well-ish known characters from fairy tales. So like the fairy godmother or Cinderella or the Little Mermaid. But again, these are Grimm fairy tales, not Disney versions of them. So they are not like, you know, it's not Disney characters or anything like that. And that's where the meat of the game kind of lies, is in the fable cards and the friend cards. The fable cards can be played alongside your gather cards at the beginning of the round, and they will change something for that round. They can be like a monster, like a wolf or the big bad wolf, because there are two normal wolves and one big bad wolf. And, you know, whoever plays the Fable card.
There are two normal wolves?
Yeah, so there's like two like normal wolf minis, and then there's a big bad wolf mini, and they do different things. I don't really know why, but there
are. Is it the big wolf, the bad wolf, and the big bad wolf?
I don't know. It could be if you want to name them that way.
I'm gonna house rule it.
Fair. That's totally your choice. But in any case, you play these Fable cards, and they can do things like place monsters on the board that do certain things to mess with players. One of them might say, if you, like Ashley last night got one that said, if you go to this, if you end up at the same gather location as another player, you steal a build action from them during the build phase. So each player gets two build phases or build phase actions. So that would mean she would get three, and the person that she shared a spot with would only get one. So it really can swing the game.
Mm-hmm.
And she combined that really well with her friend card, which, as I said, are like the kind of more famous characters, which was, I think it was like the, oh man, what was the character from Snow White? The evil witch. I think it's the evil witch in Snow White who did like the poison apple.
Yes, confirmed.
And that friend card allowed her to look at, she got to choose a player and look at either their gather card or their fable card before she played her gather card. So it's like really game changing, and friends last until they get kicked out by another player or by yourself drawing another friend card. So she was able to use that to look at where somebody was going to gather and combine that with her fable to steal a build action. So she was able to like tie those together. So it's got some neat mechanics. It's not the most interesting game, but the artwork is really nice. The minis are a lot of fun. I would love to paint them, and you know, the insert's great. So I think just production wise, the game is good, and it's a fun game that's a little bit more toward the medium weight side than the lighter games, but light enough to introduce players to some cool games with.
I think the people behind this did Sorcerer City.
They did. And Tidal Blades. Yeah. Yes. And they did the Grim Masquerade, which is like a deck builder based on the same Grim fairy tales.
Interesting.
And they did like Alice Wonderland's War, which looked really interesting, but was too expensive for me to want to get into. So.
And they have a game coming out in 2023.
Yeah. It's, what is it? Like the blood something.
Yeah. Bloodstone. You're on top of things.
They're relaunching it. They launched it on Kickstarter, and then like partway through, they like already funded, but their stretch goals were like horrendous. Like they had terrible like after campaign stuff coming, and people were like, "This campaign is literally not good," and they canceled it after being funded, and were like, "Oh, we heard your feedback. We're gonna come back and relaunch." So I don't know when they're relaunching, but yeah, I knew of that one.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. I have three more games, and I am going to rapid fire go through them. Game number one, Haggis, a modern classic trick-taking game for two players. Very interesting. I played it on Board Game Arena. Some of the stuff was lost on me because scoring tends to be lost on you on Board Game Arena. I am hopefully playing this in person with Bill this week, and I am also hopefully going to get Bill to join us on the show, at which point we will actually talk about Haggis. Early review is, I like it. Also, the designer of Haggis is in this trick-taking Discord, and when I was playing Tichu yesterday, because I'm in this Tichu tournament that's never ending, he was a spectator, and we were speaking briefly about Haggis, and I explained how I was a little confused at parts of Haggis coming from Tichu, because it's a similar game, but the types of cards you can play, like the sets that you can play, are different. Something you can play in Tichu is consecutive pairs, 2 sixes, 2 sevens, 2 eights as one play, and you can do a similar thing in Haggis, but they have to be the same suit. So a pair of sixes, green and red, with a pair of sevens, green and red, etc. They can't just be any suit consecutive pairs.
Okay.
So in Tichu, there are four suits, and yes. you can play consecutive pairs. It does not matter what the suits are. So yes. I'll just use standard deck of cards. Spade, diamond, six. Club, heart, seven. Valid pair, valid set of consecutive doubles play. But yes. in Haggis, they have to be the same suits. So diamond, heart, six. Diamond, heart, seven.
Oh. Interesting. Okay.
Right. And that was confusing for me just coming from Tichu because I kept thinking I had valid plays in my hand, but I didn't. And I, like I said, we were playing Tichu and the designer of Haggis was spectating and in the voice chat with us. And I was explaining how I was confused from there. And he chimed in and he said, do you want to know why I designed it that way? Which was really cool.
He doesn't like Tichu.
So the reason he designed it that way is because there are these three wild cards, a jack, a queen, and a king, that can be used as anything. And there are also bombs that they can be used for. And he told me that he made the consecutive doubles this way to suck out these wild cards from your own hand. So you have to decide if you want to save them for a bomb or to use them to make this hard thing to beat.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, so it was cool to have him chime in on that.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was my supposed to be shorter discussion on Haggis, but we will actually talk about it later.
Cool.
Next is Touchdown Heroes. Touchdown Heroes is a new trick-taking game, wow, what a surprise, out of Japan that I played with Patrick and two other people, but everyone here knows Patrick, and I think it did a really good job at modeling football in a trick-taking game. But I think it was a little too convoluted and, yeah, it was neat and there was some cool stuff in it, but overall I thought it was okay. It had this really interesting concept of a pass play or a run play, which might remind you of football. And if you do a run play, then that trick is a must-follow trick, where if you play a green, other people have to follow with a green. Or you could do a pass play, where if you play a green, other people can play whatever suit they want. And what makes that so interesting is every card, just 1 through 10 in 4 colors, every card has an ability on it that only triggers if it is played off suit. So if you play a run card, if you say you're doing a run play, then you play a green five or whatever, people have to follow suit. None of those abilities trigger. It's just about the numbers for winning the trick. If you choose a pass play, then people can play the other cards even if they have what was led. So if I play a green card and declare it a pass, people can play another color, and playing those other colors makes it easy to intercept the ball or some other football term. I actually really liked that modeling of football because, you know, it's easier to turn the ball over passing than running, I think. And I also really enjoyed the idea of a game having must follow and may follow in it.
Yeah. I think that that option brings in just more, for lack of a better word, options.
Yeah.
Which I think it's neat. Sounds interesting. But you know me, trick taking combined with a sport I don't love. It probably wouldn't be one I would give a shot to, but yeah, it's a lose-lose, as I would say.
Delightful. And before I get to this third game,
you have a question.
I'm going to throw a question your way.
Okay.
Who is your gaming partner that got away? For the record, my answer to this question is not you. So do not feel obligated.
I don't feel obligated. Okay, you good. And I still play games online and we have a podcast together. So I wouldn't say you got away.
That's right.
To be honest with you, I don't even know who they, I don't even know them, but.
Perfect. Even better. Describe them.
No, I know that I know their name. I mean, I vaguely know their names because you mention them all the time and I am drawing a blank, but I mean, they literally have every game I like. And it's the people you get to play with in Portland. Is it Rob? Is it Rob who has the games I like?
It's Ron.
Ron. Sorry, Ron. I know you're going to be on here eventually. I feel bad. But it's Ron, probably. I mean, you're playing like they're playing like Lacerda games. He has Lord of the Rings Anniversary Edition and all this cool stuff that I want to play. And I don't even live nearby. So probably that.
Well, I'll tell him on Wednesday that he's the one that got away.
Yeah.
Unless he hears this before then.
Yeah. So probably that. So what was your answer then?
My answer.
If you say Patrick, I will be upset. No, I'm kidding.
My answer is Jake.
Makes sense.
Because while we do still play games together here and there, it's difficult with the time zones. It's very difficult with the distance. You know, Australia and the United States are not close. But also, he and I had a blast playing so many games when I lived down in Melbourne. And I just remember us playing Azul with the backside and both of us just cracking up as we made these stupid plays, shooting ourselves in the foot, hoping the game wasn't going to end. And I think Jake and I have very similar play styles in a lot of these games, just trying to do something fun in case it works out and laughing hysterically when it doesn't. And maybe he and I will game in person again someday.
Cool. That would be fun.
Yeah, I have a big day of games scheduled tomorrow with the Australians. Whoa. Because it is Australia Day on Wednesday. So tomorrow at 4:00, I am going to play games with them for a few hours.
Sweet. Sounds like a good time.
It should be. You'll find out next week if it was a good time.
I hope it was a good time, or will be. So
me too. All right, tell me about a game you played, and then
I also only have one more. So the final game that I played was Ashley and I. We played three times, and we played Mind Management.
Oh,
Mind MGMT.
Did you listen to Electric Feel?
No.
You should have.
I'm sorry. Probably should have. I was going to look on Melodice and see if they had any songs that were good for it. But
for those of you listening, Electric Feel is a song by the band MGMT.
Yeah. And also for those listening, Melodice is a website that has YouTube music videos queued up for a lot of games that are supposedly in the vein of like the theme you're playing, so they fit the mood. So if you're playing, like, for example, we played Tricarion with, you know, Greg, Amanda, and Patrick, and I queued up some Melodice music, and it had a lot of like the soundtrack from The Prestige or other like magic-ish music. So it's pretty neat.
Yeah, I used it for Twilight Imperium, and we got a lot of like sci-fi TV show background songs and a bunch of Subnautica, which is great.
Any of the Leviathan screaming or whatever noise it makes?
No, but the greatest music in Subnautica is only played for you when you catch your submarine on fire and are rapidly trying to fix it. So it's this like fantastic, fantastic song that you only get to experience if you mess up horrifically. Luckily for Jessica,
it's a reward.
I messed up horrifically.
Well, at least it's a reward.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mind Management.
MGMT.
Mind MGMT is how it's spelled. It's based on a comic that I haven't read, but now that I've played the game a little bit, it makes me kind of want to check it out and just see what it's like. And it is, for those who didn't listen to the episode when I described it a while back, so I'll refresh it. It is a hidden movement, one versus all game, the all in this case being myself. Ashley was the one. And it is split between rogue agents, myself, so up to four people, and the recruiter, Ashley, who uses her secret map to try and evade my agents and pick up recruits for whatever the recruiter is recruiting for, because there's no information about it, and I don't know enough about the world to know. And there's a board that's divided into grid. It's a grid. And on each space on the grid, there are two symbols that would match up with potential locations of interest for the recruiter. So Ashley would draw three cards out of a like 16 or something at the beginning of the game. And those three cards are the symbols that she is trying to maneuver through on the board. And everyone that she maneuvers through gains her a recruit. So if a board space has two of the symbols she's trying to get and she moves through it on her turn, she gains two recruits, is the basis of the game. And from my side, the rogue agents, I am trying to catch the recruiter by doing certain actions where I can go to a space, I activate an agent, I go to a space, and I can do things such as asking. So I would point to one of the two, and this was a rule we messed up the first time we played, where I was asking about both symbols, mm-hmm. but you're only allowed to ask about one. So, for example, one symbol might be like burning tiki torches, and the other symbol might be a bus. And I might say, have you been to a location with burning tiki torches? She'll look at her secret map, and if any of the numbers she wrote, which denote, you know, what step she took, so she's numbering from one up to however many steps she's at, if any of those numbers were in a grid space that had a burning tiki torch, she would be able to pick one of those spaces, and she puts a little step token, which is a foot, somewhere on the map where she has visited with that symbol. Now, until I get to that space, I don't know how long ago she visited that space. But once I get there, I can use the reveal action, at which point she has to tell me what number is related to that step. So the way the game works is during setup, she picks a starting space and then does four movement actions. So she starts with five hidden locations that I don't know. Hmm. So she could, I could reveal, she could put a foot on the number one space and we could be on turn 10 and I go and reveal it and it says number one and it's like literally no help to me at all. So, you know, you really have to narrow it down and try and, you know, I use the ask action a lot more than the reveal action just to try and get a sense of where she's going. And in the training game, that's pretty much all there is to the game. You're just chasing the recruiter around while the recruiter's trying to pick up these recruits. And we transitioned to playing the full game. So we played two training games and a full game. And the full game adds immortals, which are agents on the recruiter's side, as well as a new action for myself, the rogue agents, called Shakedown. And the immortals block the agents from doing anything. So if an immortal is in your space, you basically cannot do an ask action, you can't do a reveal action. But what's crazier, and as I think I sent to the Discord with you and Patrick, there's a lot more to keep track of in the full game. Not in a bad way, but there's a lot more to keep track of. If an immortal is in, once again, for example, a space on the map that has a burning tiki torch, and I am in a whole other space that has a burning tiki torch, I am not allowed to ask about burning tiki torches. They're like completely blocking that symbol from being asked about. So it really narrows things, like it really cuts down on what you can do as the rogue agents.
Right.
But at the same time, the shakedown action allows me to move into a space with an immortal and I can attempt to guess what symbols the recruiter is looking for. And if I get one of them, they have to discard it and they can't recruit from that symbol anymore. So the game that was the full game with Ashley and I came down to the very last turn. I literally she was one space away from winning the game because she would have grabbed the last recruit, because that's how the recruiter wins. They grab a certain number of recruits or last a certain amount of time. And I would win the rogue agents by capturing the recruiter. She was one space away, so one movement action from moving through one of her symbols and gaining the last recruit. And I used Shakedown and guessed her last symbol, which means she herself could not recruit. But that leaves her immortals to do a different style of recruit. And it's too nitty gritty for me to like get into how they recruit. But the immortals can do a special recruitment on their own. So she ended up winning the game on that turn by using the immortals. But I was able to guess all three of her cards. So it was pretty neat. And it, you know, it adds to like the strategy, because as the immortals recruit, it eliminates symbols from the board. So, you know, you get closer and closer to what exactly it gets closer, gets you closer and closer to knowing what the recruiter's symbols are when you're doing shakedowns. So it's very much a cat and mouse game. And I don't think that I would play the training game anymore. Have after you, playing the full game.
I have three questions for you.
Yes.
Question one, is this a game?
Are you asking that because it literally asks on the box, is this a game?
On the box, it says the psychic espionage game in quotes.
Yeah. No, I would say it's a game.
Okay. I thought so. I don't know why they did that.
Yeah, neither do I.
Question two. Have you and Ashley played the same characters, I guess, role each time?
Yes, because we learned from Jaws that having three characters to control, or in this case four, would be a lot for her to think about.
Oh, no, I just mean like the same side. Like,
yes.
The cat and mouse.
No, yes. Because if we switched without having more people to play on the rogue agent side, Ashley would be controlling four characters.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it would just be a lot. So at this point, yes, we've only played where I've been the rogue agents and she's been the recruiter. She really likes it. So I think she might enjoy being Jaws or the shark, whatever the shark's name is in Jaws.
Sharky McSharkface, I think.
Yeah, that. But I will say I do really want to try being the recruiter. So I'm hopeful that maybe one day we can get some extra people to play on the other side, or I can try the game out with someone who would play the other side by themselves if need be, so that I can try playing as the recruiter. Cause I do like playing as the hidden characters. I think it's kind of neat. So.
Yeah. I remember hearing a lot about this game before, and it sounded really interesting when I heard it kind of described in depth. This final question is, have you, and I'm sure the answer is no, have you gotten to any of the like extra stuff in the boxes in the game?
So,
and can you talk about that a little bit?
I lost all three of the games that we played. So.
Oh, right. Okay. I remember what was discussed.
Yeah.
Go on.
So the game comes with this thing called the shift system.
Spoilers.
And essentially, yeah, I mean, it's not, I don't know how much it's giving away, because it's like in the rule book and it says what they do, but it also says like, don't open it until you've lost a few games in a row. But basically, as you lose, if you're playing like the same character, as you lose, to make the game a little easier for yourself, the shift system has these numbered boxes, 1 through 7, for both the recruiter and the rogue agents. And each little box contains a rule change and or components for the game to make it a little bit easier for that side to win, because you're losing a lot. They want to make it a little easier for you. So it kind of adds to the game in a way that gives you more help throughout the game. So I did open up the first box. We didn't play with it, but after I lost three games in a row, we did open up the first shift system box for the rogue agents. And there was a pretty neat thing that was added to the game for the rogue agents that it definitely adds some complexity, but it also seems like it would be, you know, pretty neat to have during my turns. So yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to trying that a bit more. Especially if Ashley and I keep playing as the same characters, I don't see why we wouldn't start opening those as we get on streaks. But yeah, mind management. I really like it. I think Ashley really likes it. She said she really likes it, so I have no reason to think she's lying. And that was our that was the last game that I had played between the last podcast and now.
All right, I have one more game and one more question. So I will start with the game. That game I also played with Patrick. And this, I guess, you know, you can't kill something if it's already dead, according to you. But this is Patrick's Teach You Killer. We played a game called Yokai Septet. And Ben, how's your Latin? Is this Latin?
So what does sept mean? I did take Latin in middle school.
Yeah.
I don't quite. I know.
How many sides are on a hexagon?
Six.
How about an octagon?
Eight. It's seven.
How about a septagon? How about September?
Nine. It's nine.
Seven. September is a trick.
Wait.
September is seven. October is eight. November is nine. December is ten.
No, I know. I didn't.
But Julius Augustus put July and August there. Anyway, Yokai Septet, sept is seven, is a game.
Oh my god. No, see, okay, that explains it. I was thinking of a heptagon. That's why I was thinking of seven as a heptagon. But it's also a septagon. It's either.
I hoped. Anyway.
Continue, I'm sorry.
Yokai Septet is a game where the number seven is going to be your best friend. So there are, this is a partnered trick-taking game. You can play it free for all three player. I don't know why you would do that. So I'm just going to treat it as the four player game that it is, because that's the only thing that I played it as anyway. Yokai Septet is a partnered trick-taking game. So four player, two teams of two trick-taking game that has seven suits. Each suit has seven cards in it, and the number seven is in each suit. These seven suits are staggered. So the first suit is the numbers one through seven. The second suit is the numbers two through eight, then three through nine, etc. There is a trump suit, so one suit that beats the rest. And there is a super trump card. The 1 through 7 suit is the A through 7 suit. So the A is the 1, and it beats every other card in the game. Because it's the lowest card in the game, I guess. Anyway, the way this game works is you will play until one team has won seven tricks, or until one team has taken four of the sevens. So your goal is to win four of the seven sevens in your tricks, and your team has to do that before you win seven tricks. That's pretty much the whole game. There's a really interesting balance of when you want to win stuff and when you want to lose stuff. It's kind of reminiscent of Bears almost, because you want to maybe take the lead so you can win a trick that has a seven in it, but also in doing so, you're bringing your team closer to the seven tricks taken limit.
Yeah.
You pass cards. You only pass to your partner. Gosh, how am I forgetting already? You pass three cards to your partner, I believe. God, I played too many trick takers lately. But you pass cards to your partner, and it's really interesting because if I pass a seven to my partner, it is either saying I have the highest card in this suit, so you're safe to play it because then I can take it. Or it is saying this is the only card I have of that suit, and I didn't want to be forced to play it to lose it. So there's an interesting decision space there, and I really liked it. I think it's really neat to have staggered suits when you're just looking at numbers and trumps. And the sevens are worth points as well. And the seven that is on the low side of its suit, so, you know, the 1 to 7, that 7 is the high side of the suit, and the 6 to 12, the 7 is on the lower side of that suit. The points work that way. So if you win with that 7 that is on the 6 to 12 suit, it's going to be worth more points because it is lower in its suit. So it's more impressive to win with it. Yeah, that is Yo-Kai Septet. You play to 7 points. Like I said, the number 7 is your best friend. It's like George Costanza made this game. And yeah, I quite enjoyed it. And Patrick also quite enjoyed it.
Sounds like it from what I heard. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was Yo-Kai Septet. Thus concludes the trick-taking portion of the podcast. And we will close out this episode with a question. Ben, what game made you think I could be a board game designer?
I don't think any game has made me feel like I could design a board game. That seems so difficult, to be honest.
Really? Don't overthink this, because there are a few that I will answer this with and you'll be like, oh yeah, of course. So I will give you two of my answers first to help you out. Okay. One of them you actually mentioned, Silver and Gold. I think I might have the brain power to make a game of that complexity. Similarly, Just One. I think I would be able to think up a game of that complexity. I don't think it would be a good one, but I think I would be able to do it.
Okay, well, in that case, I think most clue-giving word association games, I could probably come up with a game similar to that. But I think along the lines of the reason, like, why I don't think that I would be able to design a game is because, like, the games that I'm thinking of are games like Tricarion and, like, right, Anachrony and, like, heavy games.
Yeah, those are what I enjoy to design enjoy playing. A game I like to play.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, I guess in that case, you know, probably Splendor.
Really?
Because it's just a straight-up engine builder. I could come up with some way that cards can interact and gain you more stuff without you really doing anything.
All right, so, Splendor.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps up this week's episode of Jonah and Ben Play Board Games with Friends. As always, I'm Ben, joined by my co-host Jonah. Thanks for joining.
Thanks. We're like back to
the beginning of this podcast. Well, it was nice to talk to you again. And thank you, everybody, for listening. We will catch you on the next one. And thanks to Louisa for the great music throughout.